So we're holding on page tests in Megillah, still the middle of Os tests, about the middle of the page. No, in Megillah. Megillah page tests, about the middle of the page. We're in the middle of the psichtas of the, we said that various chachamim would use psukim from different places in Nach to open up and to give us a greater insight into the story of the Megillah. So we had a few of them already. So now the Gemara continues with another. Rabbi Yeshua bar Chanina or Ben Levi posach lapischa lahayt parshasa mehocha. He would open up this parasha again when he's darshaning on Megillas Esther to the tzibur. He began his drasha with the following posach from the Torah. V'hoya kasha sosh Hashem aleichem lahayt tiveschem legemer. Just as Hashem was happy over you to do you good, etc. So the posach continues. Ken yosis Hashem aleichem. Hashem is going to yosis on you to that not such good things are going to happen. Ken yosis legemer. The question is, what does it mean? On the face of it, Yosis means that he will be happy, like Yosis alayach halikoyich. The question is, v'chi u'mi chodi kudshabrichu v'mapalten shor reshoyim? Is Hashem happy when reshoyim have their downfall? After all, we know Hashem is the ultimate tov, teva tov v'hetiv, and he always wants roitzat v'tshuvas reshoyim v'ein atachofetz v'misosan, as we say in Ne'ilah. So how could Hashem like it and be happy when the reshoyim have a downfall and are destroyed? V'hoksiv, and in fact we find a posuk to the contrary. The psukim, the in Divrei Yomim, it describes how at one point during the reign of Yehoshaphat Melech Yehuda, a huge coalition of nations came across the Dead Sea and invaded Eretz Yisrael. There were Ammonim and Meovim and Amalekim and so on and so forth. In fact, Kapitel Pei Gimel, if you look in the Oyer Yosef Yitzchak Tillim in the caption to Kapitel Pei Gimel, it mentions that Kapitel has to do with that battle. So either David had written it in advance with Ruach HaKodesh, knowing that's going to happen, or the Malbim explains on that and some other such Kapitel that they were actually composed at that time. Whatever the case, you have in that Kapitel, all the Edim, Yishma'elim, Moyov, Bahagrin, Mol, Gvol, Bahamin, Bahamolek, a whole huge coalition of nations that are coming to fight against the Jewish people. Anyway, so the psukim describe over there how a Navi tells Yehoshaphat and the Jewish people, you're going to stand there and you're going to watch from afar and see how Hashem is going to destroy them. They're going to end up fighting with one another and defeating and killing one another, and all you'll have to do is come and take the spoils. So the Pasuk describes...
The Goyim are going to fight each
other? The Goyim are going to fight one against... Yeah, they have three out of a bunch of different nations over there. Moav and Ammon and Edom. So Hashem made that they started being suspicious of one another, and yeah. So the Pasuk describes that Yehoshaphat had the soldiers prepare as though they're going to war, even though they're not actually going to be fighting. And the Pasuk says that he arranged that the Levim should be there to sing Shira to Hashem in advance for the nest. And the Pasuk says, B'tseis lifnei acholos, when they were going in front of, when the Kohenim and Levim are going in front of the armed troops, V'omrim, they would say, Hodu Lashem, Ki La'olam Chasto. Now, usually it's Hodu Lashem, Ki Toiv, Ki La'olam Chasto. Where's the Ki Toiv? V'omr of Yechner, why here are they not saying Kitoiv? Because Hashem is not happy when the Rishoyim have to be destroyed. So even though, yes, in this case, Hashem is doing it as a nest for the Jewish people so that they'll be safe from these Moavim and Ammonim and so forth, nevertheless, it's not appropriate to say Kitoiv on that because it's not part of the ultimate Toiv that Hashem wants that even the Rishoyim shouldn't have to be destroyed. So therefore, it's Hodul Hashem Ki Lo'olam Chastoy in that passage. Unlike usually, it's Hodul Hashem Ki Toif Ki Lo'olam Chastoy. There, Omer of Shmuel Banachmeni, Omer of Yonasin, or of Yechanan, he was another illustration of that idea that Hashem is not happy when the Rishoyim have a downfall. My Dichtiv, like Korav Zel Zekol Aloyla, the pasuk says before Kriya Samsuk, this one did not approach that one all night. Now, in the simple meaning of the pasuk, it means that the Mitzrayim and the Jews are not able to approach the Mitzrayim, are not able to come close to the Jews because you have the Amud Ha'onon, the Amud Eish Va'onon is in between them. But we're understanding that Zel El Zel also means the Malachim, like we call it Zel El Zel V'yaman. So it means the Malachi Asharis wanted to say the regular Shira before Hashem because it's early in the morning, and that's when you have one group of Malachim that sing the Shira. My handiwork, the Mitzrayim, are drowning in the sea, and you want to say Shira before me. So we see again that Hashem is not happy when his own creations, in this case the Mitzrayim, have to be drowned and destroyed. In fact, this is a reason that's given. We know that in Pesach we say Hallel Shalom, we say whole Hallel in davening only the first two nights and the first two days of Pesach. We don't say it the remaining 6 days. There's two reasons for that. The Gemara gives a reason because unlike Sukkot, where every day you had different karbanos, and therefore every day is like a miniature Yom Tov in itself, Pesach is not like that. It was the exact same karban every day, and therefore, once you pass the first day, then it's not really anything new that you should be saying Hallel Shalom. But there's also a reason that Tosfos brings, in some places, based on our Gemara over here, because on Shvi'i Shel Pesach, the Mitzrayim were drowned, and therefore it's inappropriate to say Shira about that. So therefore, now we're not going to make Chol HaMoed, we don't want Chol HaMoed to be stronger than Shvi'i, and then Shvi'i and Achon Shel Pesach, therefore we say Hallel that time too. Mind you, by the way, the Jewish people said Shira, they said Oz Yashir, that's different. They'd been directly saved and their lives were saved, so therefore they had to say Shira. But to say a Shira over the destruction of the Rishoyim is not appropriate. So therefore, so what does it mean when the Pasuk is saying, Kein Yosis Hashem Aleichem, Lahavid Eschem, that Hashem is going to be happy over you to destroy you, Rachman Al-Tzlan? If we're saying Hashem is not even happy when the Goyim are destroyed, how much more so the Jews? So what does that Pasuk mean? So now, Amr Rav Yosef Rav Chanina, or Rav Elazar, it means, Hu Eino Sos Avalacherim Nesis. It means Hashem himself is not going to be happy when the Jewish Rishoyim have to be destroyed, but he will allow others to be happy. Yosis Hashem Aleichem, in other words, does not mean Hashem will be happy. It means Hashem will cause others to be happy. So this was all Rav Yeshua Bar Chanina's, Rav Yeshua Bar Levi's drosha to begin Megillas Esther, as he was illustrated with this pasuk, that Hashem was saying, I'm going to allow the Goyim to be happy that you're going to be destroyed, which happened, in fact, by Yetzer Haman, by Yemahu Sameach, the Tov Lev, and he's all happy that he thinks he's going to carry out his plot, and in the end, Hashem didn't allow it to happen. And the Gemara says, Dekanami. In fact, we see that if we look carefully at the word, Dichtiv Kein Yosis, V'loitziv Yosus. If it meant that Hashem himself will be happy, then it would say, Kein Yosus Hashem. Instead, yosis is a transitive verb, poil yotza lashlishi, as it's called in dictuk, which means it's a verb that you're having somebody else do something. Now, it's obviously not always the case. We have, for example, yos alayat alakoyach means Hashem himself will be happy. But nevertheless, the Gemara is saying that it also, the word, the form of the word, yosis, can also mean not that he'll be happy, that would be yosus, but rather yosis can mean both. It can also mean that he'll make others happy. And that's how it was in the story of Purim, where Haman is happy that he thinks he's going to be able to lahavid eschem, lahashmid eschem, and then the Eibishka saved us and it didn't happen. So that was Rav Yochanan's psicha to illustrate, to give us a deeper insight into what's going on in the story of the Megillah. The Rif over here explains that this psicha was also meant to explain. Again, one point is we have to realize when we read the Megillah, so we have the whole story of how the Jewish people were saved. Really, when you get down to it, that story, fundamentally, it begins with Haman being elevated and making this plan, which is Perek Gimel of the Megillah. What are the first two Prakim doing over there, especially the first Perek, all about Haman, all about Achshverosh's party? Do we really need that in the Megillah? On the face of it, the story doesn't, that's kind of like a preface to the story, but it's not really so essential to the plot on the face of it. And in fact, later on in the Masechta, the Gemara brings different opinions. The Gemara brings opinions of Tanoim. The halacha is you have to hear the entire Megillah from beginning to end, every single word. But there are Tanoim. There's an opinion in the Mishnah there that says you only have to hear from Ish Yehudi, and another opinion that says you only have to hear from Achar Advar Ma'ela, from Haman's elevation, and even another opinion that's mentioned in the Braisa that says you only need to hear from Balailo Ahun Nodad Hashanas HaMalach, because that's where things really get into gear. But so then what's the whole first parak doing over there? So this helps explain it. Because, in other words, why does Hashem make it possible for the Goyim to be happy over thinking that they can destroy the Jewish people is because Hashem is saying in the Torah, you've acted badly. Now, in this case, Achashverosh made his party in order, as we're going to learn later on, among other things, to celebrate the fact that he thought that the Golos, that the 70 years of Golos are over and there's not going to be a Gola, because he thought that nothing's happened yet, and the Jews joined in that party, which got them in serious trouble. But now, the result is, why in the end did Hashem rescind the Gzera? Because they were too happy about it. Hashem allowed them to be happy, but they were going above and beyond. Yossi Hashem Aleichem. Haman is getting Sameach the Tov Lev, so therefore that caused the Eibishter, so to speak, to rethink it and decide that after all he deserves to be destroyed in the Jewish people deserve to be saved. So therefore, the first parak of the Megillah with Achshverosh's party is very essential to the story because it tells us what the thing was that they had done wrong in the first place that caused that Hashem should allow Haman to be happy over them in the first place.
You said Achshverosh had made a toy?
A party. Okay. And then they went on to the Achshverosh. Okay. Next, Rav Abba Bar Kahana brought a psichta from the following pasuk. Pasuk says in Tehelis, to the person who is good before him, before Hashem, Nosan Chochma Vadas, Hashem gives him Chochma and Das and Simcha. And so who does that refer to? And then the pasuk continues, on the other hand, you have the sinner who amasses tremendous wealth and it ends up going to the one that Hashem wants. So La Adam Shatov Lafanov, Zem Mordechai Atzadik. The first half of the pasuk is referring to Mordechai, who was in fact he deserves the what it says in the pasuk Chochma Vadas V'Simcha. He was a Chocham, as we know. He's also called Psachia. He's an expert in languages and he's expert at figuring out riddles. And he had the das to know what Bigson and Teresh are plotting. So he described as Chochma V'das. Then when the pasuk continues in Kehelas, V'lachoyte Nosef
Balshon.
Also Balshon, yeah, it's called Mordechai Bilshon. Bilshon, actually, that's pronounced, yeah, because Bialishne, you know, when I mix up the languages, you knew even when somebody is speaking in a mixture of languages, you knew how to understand it, yeah. So that's the Chochma and the das that the pasuk is describing. Mordechai Bilshon. He's called in Sefer Ezra and in Nehemiah, he's called Mordechai Bilshon. And Bilshon is a title for him because Bialishni, the Gemara says, he knew how to mix up and combine languages. Somebody could come speaking to him in a mixture of different languages and he would be able to figure out what the guy's saying. Yeah, so he's called Psachia and Bilshon, yeah. So, and through him, you have Simcha, you have Chochma and Das, which he had, and Simcha, that through him came to the Jewish people. So the first half of that pasuk, from Kehelas, then Rav Abba Bar Kahana is saying, refers to Mordechai. Then the second half of the pasuk, it continues, V'lachoyte nosan inyan, as far as the sinner, Hashem gives him the idea, less of the lichnos, to gather and to amass a tremendous fortune, zeh Haman Arosha, that refers to Haman who was a choyte and who amassed tremendous amounts of wealth. And the pasuk continues, losis latoiv lefnei lekim, that it should be given to good before Hashem. In other words, the simple meaning of the pasuk is exactly that you have Hashem gives a chocham, chochma, and das, and simcha. Meanwhile, you have a rosha who collects a tremendous fortune, and it winds up going for purposes that Hashem wants, it winds up going to the tzaddik. So here's an example. Zem Mordechai v'Esther, dichtiv bei, matosem Esther es Mordechai al beis Haman. As we find that after Haman was hanged, then all of his wealth was confiscated, and Esther gave it all to Mordechai, and put him in charge. So therefore we see that was a real life example of what Shlomo is describing in this pasuk. So therefore this pasuk serves as a fitting introduction to Megillas Esther. It illustrates what exactly happened. And again, the Rif explains, that also helps explain why the first parak of the Megillah needs to be there. Because the first parak of the Megillah, you have the whole downfall of Vashti, and then the result of that is that the throne is available, and Esther ended up taking it over. Now, we're going to learn later on in the parak that when Achshverosh, we know when Vashti disobeyed Achshverosh and he's angry at her and wants to figure out what should be done, first he went to the Chachmei Yisrael, and they washed their hands of it because they knew no matter what, whether we say in favor of Achshverosh or whether we say in favor of Vashti, we're going to be in trouble one way or the other. So they claimed we can't, we're in Golos, we don't have the head for it, etc. Go to Amun and Moav, and therefore he goes to Karshin Al-Shesar and Masa, including Memuchan, who was Haman, and they were the ones who, and Haman in particular, is the one who told him to get rid of Vashti. So the result result is, because Mordechai didn't speak up and get rid of Vashti, therefore, that's why now later on, the king trusted him, and therefore now he can be put in charge of Haman's palace, because now, and Haman's mansion, because now the king is angry at Haman, not only because he tried to kill Esther, but because previously, all those years earlier, he had been the one to kill Vashti as well. So now, all of that then serves, all of that fed into the fact that now Haman's mansion and his wealth is being taken over by Mordechai, and therefore that explains why that first paragraph from the Megillah is so essential to set the stage. Yes, so the Gemara mentions later on in the paragraph that first Achashverosh went to ask the Chachmei Sanhedrin, which includes Achashverosh, which includes Mordechai. Then when they pretended like we can't answer because we would get in trouble one way or the other, then he went to He planned that his daughter will take over. Right. But the point is, now, all those years later, when Ahasuerus is mad at Haman, Hagam Lichbash as Hamalki Imi Baborius, he's not only angry at him for threatening Esther. He's also remembering all those years ago he also had Vashti killed. So now that also factored in when he right away ordered Haman hanged.
Yeah.
Okay. Next. Rab Abba or Rabba Bar Oifron Posach Lapischa Lahai Parshas Mehach. Rab Abba or Rabba Bar Oifron. Tosfos points out, by the way, the name is not Ephroin, but rather Oifron, because Ephroin is the name of a Rosha in Chumash, and you don't name after a Rosha. Therefore, Ephron, like the one who sold Maris HaMachbela to Avraham Avinu when he was greedy, so therefore the name over here is Oifron. Anyway, Posach Lapischa Lahai Parshas Mehach. He gave the following psich that in Megillas Esther. Pasuk says in Yirmiyah, they have a Nevuah over there where Yirmiyah is saying that the country of Elam is going to be devastated and destroyed. Elam is nowadays part of Iran. Its capital was Shushan. Shushan is the main city in that part of the world. In particular, from the Pesukim, it comes out over there because Elam assisted Nebuchadnezzar and his army in conquering Yerushalayim and destroying the Beis Mikdash. So Yirmiyah says in Nevuah about them that Hashem is going to destroy them. So now the Pasuk says, Vesamti Chisi be'Elam, Hashem says, I will place my throne in Elam, which refers to the time, Marasha says, during the time when the Jewish people are in Golus there, because we know Golul Adam Shechina Imam, wherever the Jewish people go in Golus, the Shechina goes along with them. Therefore, when the Jewish people are in Golus in Elam, in Shushan, in that vicinity, then Hashem is with them in their Golus, and therefore that can be described as Hashem's throne is there. And Hashem continues, V'havadti Misham, Melech V'sorim, Ne'um Hashem, and says Hashem, I will destroy from there the king and the princes. So, Melech Zu Vashti, V'sorim, Zehoman, V'aser Asmanu. The word Melech over there refers to Vashti. She was the queen, but the queen is Ishte Kegufei, kind of, so she's almost like the king herself. Besides, she descended from royalty. She's descended from Nebuchadnezzar and company. And the Sarim refers to Haman Vaser Asbanav, so all of them were destroyed at that time. Meaning, Marasha says, on the face of it, if you didn't have that, if you didn't say the Samti Chisi, you could think that the Pasuk is talking about later on, Alexander the Great, some 40 years or so after the story of Purim, he conquered Elam and destroyed the Persian Empire. But since it says the Samti Chisi be'Elam, then the Gemara, then Rabba Bar Oifron is understanding that we're talking about something earlier than that, namely not the complete destruction of Elam, because Shushan Avira continued to stand. It was still a royal city afterwards, but rather specifically to the Melech Besorim, to Vashti, and Haman and his sons, who were defeated and destroyed over there.
What is Chisi?
Chisi. My Vesanti Chisi. I will place my throne, Hashem says. Be'elam.
Of course, he went to...
So that his throne is there, because the Shekhinah is there, and then Hashem calls that Vashti, and later on Haman and his sons are killed over there. Next.
They were also destroyed.
Rav Dimi Bar Yitzchok Pischa Lahai Parshas Mehach. Next, Rav Dimi Bar Yitzchok's Psichta to Megillas Esther was based on the following Pasuk from Ezra. You have over there in Ezra, you have a part over there where Ezra is saying a long tefillah to Hashem. He finds out that there is a problem. There are Jews who are intermarried with Goyish women, and he says a tefillah he makes a public spectacle of it to plead with Hashem, but to rip his clothes and fast and do a whole public tefillah in order to make everybody realize the gravity of the situation. And in his tefillah, he says as follows. You have to remember, by the way, this that when Ezra came to Eretz Yisrael, we learned in Rosh Hashanah, was only a few years after the second Beis Hamikdash had been built. Meanwhile, the events of Purim happened a few years before the second Beis Hamikdash was built. So altogether, you're talking it's maybe like 10 years from the story of Purim until Ezra's Tefillah. And he says like this, Ki avodim anachnu, because we are servants, we're still in Golus, and we're as the Gemara says later on in the Perek, Atati anan, Abdi Achashverosh da'anan, we're still Achashverosh servants, the Geula of Purim was not a Geula Shlema, because we're still ruled over by the Persians. But Ezra continues, Uva'abiseinu la'yazavonu elekeinu, still in our servitude, still in our slate, in our enslavement to the Persians, Hashem has not abandoned us. Vayat aleinu chesed, and Hashem inclined chesed on us, lifnei malchei poras, in front of the kings of Persia. So that's part of his tefillah. So Amos said, Vayat aleinu chesed, bimei Mordechai. He's referring to the events that happened in the time of Mordechai, because Rashi points out, the continuation of the pasuk is the continuation of the pasuk is the losses among other things that Ezra mentions that Hashem gave us chesed in the eyes of the kings of Persia, losses lono michya, to give us a life, and that refers to the whole events of Purim where they were threatened with the opposite of that chas v'shalom, and then the Eivish gave them chesed before malchei paras, and they were left alive. So now a decade later or so, Ezra is thanking the Eivish for that and going on to say in his tefillah, and look at that, we're being so ungrateful and we're going and violating your mitzvahs by intermarrying and doing other things like that. So therefore, sort of Dimi Bar Yitzchok would use that as his psichta that we see from that, that we see that pasuk in Ezra kind of encapsulates in it the whole story of Purim. And one idea behind it is it's meant also, we talked about yesterday that Ben Yehoyada talks about a number of these psichtas are meant as a limud schus on Jewish people, even though, as we said, they ate from Achshverosh Suda, and they were very guilty for that, and they had worshipped, they bowed down to Barnetz's statue, and they're guilty for that also. Nevertheless, there's a certain limud schus, because after all, Ki Avodim Anachnu, because in Golus were subjugated to the Goyim, and therefore it's hard to resist them. So it serves a certain limud schus on them.
Was Vashti a granddaughter of Nebuchadnezzar?
Vashti was a great granddaughter of Nebuchadnezzar. Belshazzar was Nebuchadnezzar's grandson, and Vashti was his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Next, he used the following posik as his psichta. Posik until him. Hirkavka enesh l'reshenu, you made a man wide over our heads. In other words, parshat means as if like we're prostrate on the ground and people are riding over us. Bonu va'esh v'mayim, we've come through fire and water. Vatotzienu lo revoya, and you took us out with satisfaction. Lo revoya literally means like overflowing, like kosi revoya. So, Bonu Ba'esh Bimei Nebuchadnezzar, when it says we came through fire, refers to what happened in the time of Nebuchadnezzar, when Hanani, Mishael, Azariah were thrown into the fiery furnace, or that's pointed actually, Marsha says also the fact that Nebuchadnezzar burnt the Beis Mikdash. So that can be described as Bonu Ba'esh. Uva Mayim Bimei Pare, when were we going through water, was much earlier in the time of Pare, when he was throwing the babies into the Nile. And we thank Hashem, and we say he took us out in an overflowing way, bimei Haman, in the time of Haman, where in fact, Marashah points out, the word revoya has to do with a pori, like toisi revoya, so it means, and everything, all the major events, all the turning points in the story of Purim, all happen at parties. Achashverosh's party, Haman's party with Achashverosh, Esther's two parties over there, so, and afterwards we have a mishnah, a simcha on Purim, so everything is vatotzienu lo revoya, that you took us out in a way of revoya where the cups of wine and other drinks are overflowing with goodness. Meloya Royim, one of the Mefarshim in the back of the Gemara, points out an interesting verb. Soon the Gemara is going to quote another one of the psichtas based on a pasuk in Mishlei that begins with the words Ari Noihem V'Doiv Shoket, which means a roaring lion and a growling bear. Well, the initials of those four words spell out Enosh. So Hekavta Enosh L'Reshenu refers to, as the Gemara is going to explain, Nebuchadnezzar and Achashverosh, who successively ruled over the Jewish people.
And
Achashverosh. As the Gemara is going to point out soon. Next, Rabbi Yochanan Pasach Lapischa Lahai Parshos Mehacha. Rabbi Yochanan's Psichta. Rabbi Yochanan's Psichta was based on the following Pasach, also in Tilim. Zocher Chastev Amunosim Beis Yisrael. Hashem remembered his kindness and his faithfulness to the house of Yisrael. Ro Chol Apse Oretz Eis Yeshua Selekenu. All the ends of the earth saw the salvation that Hashem gave us. Amos, I wrote, collapsed. Remember, when can we say that the entire, even to the ends of the earth, saw how Hashem saved us? Zevi, may Mordechai and Esther. In the time of Mordechai and Esther, where letters were being sent throughout the entire known world, first with the original Gzeira, and then with rescinding or overriding Gzeira, so the entire world knew about it. Maharsha points out more nuances in it as well. We have that, like this, you have the expression Zohar Chastover Emunosoi, because you have, like, we're saying that there were people who ate from Achashverosh's soda. And they were guilty of that because Achashverosh, first of all, they're fraternizing with and coming close to the Goyim, and that's a problem in itself. But on top of that, as we're going to say later in the Perek, Achashverosh's Suda was meant, among other things, like we said before, to celebrate that he thought that Golos, the 70 years are over and the Jews have not been redeemed yet, and Chas V'Shalom, there's not going to be a Gaula, and Jews were joining in that party. That's a serious problem. And therefore, nevertheless, the Eibishka showed them Chesed, that Zohar Chastoi. Then you had the Jews who were faithful all along, like Mordechai didn't eat from the party, and he told other people not to as well. They were the ones described with Emunosei. They kept their faith with Hashem, and Hashem reciprocated with faithfulness to them. So that's the Zohar Chastev Emunosei.
That they brought the
Kingdom from the Bismarck, there's another problem as well, yeah. And then, what does it mean, Beis Yisrael? Well, we know that Beis refers to the women, like Kosem Ela Beis Yaakov. So therefore, Zohar Chastev, Hashem remembered his chesed on behalf of the Jews who didn't deserve it, because they had eaten by Achashverosh's party, Emunosei, as well as for the Jews who did deserve Hashem to save them because they hadn't, Leveis Yisrael, and Hashem accomplished it through a woman, through Esther, Leveis Yisrael. And Ro Chalak Se'aretz doesn't just mean, as Rashi says, that the letters went all over the whole world. It also means because Ahasuerus ruled over the whole world. So therefore, Chalak Se'aretz, all the way to the ends of the world, knew about what Hashem had accomplished over there. So therefore, so that was the psichta that Rabbi Yochanan used when he was darshaning on Megillas Esther. Next, Reshlokish Pasuk of Pischalai Parshasa Mehacha. Reshlokish used the following Pasuk as his Psichta from Megillas Esther. Pasuk says in Mishle, Arim Noihim, a roaring lion, the Dove Shokik, and a growling bear. It actually points out over there and in other places that in English we have different words for the noises that different animals make. In Lashon Kodesh you also do. The word for a lion's roar is Noihim. The word for growling, like by a bear, is Shokik. Anyway, Moshe Rosho Al Amdol is a wicked ruler over a poor people. So in the simple sense, in other words, the Pasuk is saying, as dangerous as a roaring lion or a growling bear, that's how dangerous it is when you have a king, a Rasha, over a poor people, because he squeezes them and takes advantage of them, whatever. But now, the Shlokish Darshan is as follows. Wait, Ari Noyim Zend Nebuchadnezzar HaRasha. The first words of the Pasuk, Ari Noyim, a roaring lion, refers to Nebuchadnezzar HaRasha, Dichtibbe, where he's described in the Pasuk with a metaphor, Ola Arya Misubchoi. The lion has come up out of his thicket, out of the bushes, where the lion, the real live lions hide out in bushes, and then they go and attack their prey, and therefore the Navi, Yirmiyah, uses that as a metaphor for like Nebuchadnezzar is coming out of his thicket like a lion, and he's ready to attack Eretz Yisrael. So we see Nebuchadnezzar is compared to a lion. You have the famous Medrash that says on Netzer Asher that Nebuchadnezzar, who's compared to a lion, came in Chodesh Av, which is the month of Mazel Aryeh, and destroyed the Beis Mikdash, which is compared to a lion, Al Manas, on condition that Hashem, who is compared to a lion, Ari Shoag Mila Yira, will rebuild the Beis Mikdash, which is compared to a lion, in Chodesh Av. The Rebbe talks a lot about.
The
Yidna
compared to the lion also.
Yeah. You're not compared to a lion, yeah, Hinam Kari, Kari, Yakum, yeah. They never talked about that a lot in Sichas, that the point of it is, we see from that the whole purpose of the Churban is a Yeridat Tzorech Aliyah, it's all Al-Manas, in order that it'll be built in an even greater and better way. Anyway, we see though that Nebuchadnezzar is compared to a lion.
The
Dov Shoitik, when the post continues, the growling bear, Zachashverosh, that refers to Achashverosh. And the point is, in other words, that both Nebuchadnezzar, we're saying that both Nebuchadnezzar and Achashverosh were both dangerous to the Jewish people. And also, Maharsha points out, Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the Beis Hamikdash, Achashverosh prevented it from being rebuilt, as we've talked about before. So therefore, that's why they're put together in the Pasuk. Dichtiv Bei B'Malchus Paras. Now, why is Achashverosh being compared to a bear? As it says about the kingdom of Persia, Hashem shows Daniel a vision where he sees four wild animals, each one representing one of the four Malchus. So he sees a lion-like creature representing Babel, and then he sees a bear-like creature representing Persia. And the Pasuk says, Ba'aru cheva ochri sinyana. Then there was another animal, a second animal, Domya ledoiv, which resembled a bear. And that represents the Persians, because of Tony Rabbi Yosef taught a b'risa, Elu Parsi, and that the bear refers to the Persians. We learned about this previously as well. They eat and drink gluttonously like a bear, when we see Bol and Bosu Kadoiv, they're covered with flesh and muscles like a bear. Mugadlan Seyer Kadoiv, they grow their hair long like a bear. They ain't like the Nucha Kadoiv, and they have no rest. They're constantly on the move. They're constantly on the move like a bear. So therefore, a bear is a very appropriate. It was a very appropriate marshal for the Persians, and therefore, in Daniel's vision, the Persians are being represented by a bear, and Ahasuerus, being the king of the Persians, therefore, is represented in the Pasuk in Mishlei by a growling bear. There are, by the way, there's places where Rabbi Yitzchok talks about, and the Rebbe in turn talks about the deeper idea behind it, that a bear also represents tremendous strength. So we're saying over here that's covered with muscles, and it's also, the Gemara mentioned in Kiddushin, the Persians have 9 of the 10 measures of strength in the world. And so Rabbi Yitzchok talks about, and the Rebbe talks about, the deeper idea about Doiv. We know the name Doiv, after all, is used as a Jewish name. It's the name of 3 of our Rebbeim. So it represents the tremendous strength that can be transformed into Kiddusha. But here we're talking about, for the Persians, they used it, and they used it in a negative way. Anyway, so that's the first half of the pasuk. I re-know him b'doiv shekik. Then when the pasuk continues, Moshe Rosha, a wicked ruler, Zehaman, that refers to Haman, who was wicked. And Al-Amdol, when it says over a poor nation, El Yisrael shen dalem min ha-mitzvahs, that refers to the Jewish people who at that time were poor of mitzvahs. Later on, we have when we get to the part of Megillas Esther where Haman is starting his accusation to Ahasuerus, he starts off Yeshnei Amechad. I mean, no, it says they're Yoshnu and Mitzvahs. They're asleep and they're careless with mitzvahs, so that they're lacking in mitzvahs, and therefore that's what made it possible now for the Ari Noyim and the Doiv Shoykik and the Moshe Rosha to be able to dominate them. So therefore, Sarah Shlokish would use that pasuk as his introduction to illustrate what's going on in Megillas Esther, that because they were dalim in Mitzvahs is why they were in trouble, and then they actually took us out of that trouble. So then Mordechai worked to build up their amunah and to make them not dal anymore, but rather to make them rich in mitzvah.
So the yidden in mitzvah.
So eventually the yidden strengthened themselves in mitzvah. That's Mordechai put in tremendous effort to do that. But we're saying, why were they in trouble in the first place? Why did they tangle with Nebuchadnezzar and with Achshveirosh and with Haman? Because there was a point when they were dal in mitzvah.
It looks like that's every generation, because you have also with the Rome, the Greeks with a Hanukkah.
Right now,
and even now.
Yeah, right now we're talking about
all the Israelis are
fine. But Rosh Lakish was talking about how things were in the time of the Megillah in order to illustrate what was going on over there, in order for us to understand, to have a deeper understanding of what happened with the story of Megillah Esther. Again, the Rif explains over here that there's also a certain limud schus in it, because they were being ruled over by powerful Nebuchadnezzar, who was like a lion, and powerful Ahasuerus, who was like a bear. Therefore, they weren't completely able to withstand. They should have withstood and not bowed to Nebuchadnezzar's statue, and they should have withstood and not eaten by Ahasuerus's party, and they did, in fact, get in trouble for that, but nevertheless, there's a certain limud schus, because when you're faced with a lion or a bear, you don't really have a lot of alternatives.
Okay.
Next. Rabbi Lozer pasuk lapischal ahay parshas mehach. Rabbi Lozer began his drasha on Megillas Esther with the following pasuk, Vehelis. Ba'atzatayim yimach hamakore. The pasuk says, because of laziness, the simple meaning of the pasuk, ba'atzatayim yimach hamakore, means because of laziness, the roof sags. Mekore is like the word tikra, the roof. So in the simple meaning, it means exactly that. If a person is lazy and doesn't take care of his house, eventually the roof starts sagging because he's not making sure to maintain his house, and eventually it's going to collapse. But here, Rabbi Lozer would douse in as follows. Bishvil atzlos shahoyah behem b'Yisrael. Because of the laziness that the Jewish people showed at that time, where they weren't learning Torah, like Oscar Batorah, Bimei Haman, in the times of Haman, they were not be involved as much as they should have been in learning Torah, because of that, the Ba'at Zaltayim. In fact, there's an explanation that Ba'at Zaltayim is, the Rif brings over here, Ba'at Zaltayim can be broken down into Ba'atzlas Yud Mem. Yud Mem is Yam, meaning the sea of Torah, because Torah is compared to a sea. So they were lazy in the Yam of Torah. Because of that, Yimach HaMakoreh means Nase Sonish al Mokim Moch, means the enemy of Hashem, which is a euphemistic way of saying Hashem himself, became weak, like so to speak, like Hashem, didn't have the strength, or acted as if he didn't have the strength to save them. Batzatayim, because of the laziness, Yimach became poor. HaMakoreh, the Gemara is going to explain, is a name for Hashem.
You divide the word, what?
Ma'atzaltayim, we're dividing into Aslos, which means laziness, and Yud Mem, which means it.
Yud Mem is Yam,
the sea, like the sea of Torah, yeah. The sea of Torah, yeah. So because they weren't learning Torah, therefore Yimach HaMakarta. So Ve'en Moch Ela Oni. Now we have to understand the word Moch means poor. Shenema Ve'im Moch Umer Kecha. As we find, the person pledges an Erech to the Beis Hamikdash, his own Erech, somebody else's Erech, whatever, and then he can't afford to pay it. Then you have the dinim of what happens over there. So we see that the word Moch means poor. Ve'en Makora El Hakadosh Baruch Hu. The word Makora, the roofer, refers to Hashem. Shenema Makora B'Mayim Al Yosef, as we have described in the pasuk that Hashem roofs his upper stories with water. That Hashem, so to speak, made the as if like you have, the ground floor is the earth, and the second floor is the heavens in which there's the water that Hashem sends down as rain, and it's so to speak as though Hashem made it like a ceiling, like a roof. So therefore, Hashem can be described as Hamakara. So therefore, so Batzal Tayim, Yimach Hamakara comes out to mean, as a result of the laziness, therefore the Makara became moch, became weak, so to speak. Hashem became weak and poor, as if Kavyachol was unable to help them. Makara was saying means Hashem. So Rabbi Lazar now would use that as his introduction to the Megillah to explain why is it the Jewish people were in such tremendous danger over there is because they were lazy and they weren't learning Torah. Because in other words, when we do what Hashem wants, then we add strength to Hashem, Kavyachol. And when we don't, then the opposite, Kavyachol, like we cause Hashem to be weak. So therefore, see, he would explain it on the basis of that pulse. And by the way, you have, for example, the Gemara mentions in Kiddushin that Elam, as we said before, the country of Elam, which included Shushan Abira, Zochsa Lumud Beloy Lama, the expression is in Kiddushin, they had this chus to learn Torah, but not to teach it. Meaning we find that Daniel lived over there, we find that Mordechai lived over there, they should have had, the whole place should have been full of their Talmidim. But we don't find. We find in Babel, Ezra, who lived in Babel, had a huge number of Talmidim, and he taught the entire Jewish people. Daniel and Mordechai did not, because in Elam, nobody was interested in learning. So that fits with what we're saying over here. Ba'atzal Tayim, because they were lazy, and they weren't interested in learning Torah. When they had Daniel, and later on Mordechai available, then the result is,
Did they keep Shabbos?
Ashes, they kept Shabbos, but nevertheless, we're saying it's fine to hit his Shabbos. Keeping Shabbos is very important, but learning Torah is where it's at.
Okay.
Yeah.
Rav Nachman.
Rav Nachman Yitzchok Pasuk L'Pischa L'Hai Parshosa Mehocha. Rav Nachman Yitzchok started his drasha on Megillas Esther with the following pasuk: Shira Malas LeDavid Lule Hashem Shehoyo Lanu V'Gomer. If it weren't for Hashem who was with us, B'kum Aleinu Odom. When a man stood up against that us, so he pointed out Odom V'Lei Melech. The point is the pasuk is stressing it was a person, a regular person, not a king, and therefore that refers to Haman. Meaning, in other words, in general, in Jewish history, when the Jewish people were in danger, it was usually because of a king. This is one rare example where we find that the person who was threatening the Jewish people was not a king, but rather a commoner. So, I mean, he wasn't a commoner, he was a Mishnah Melech, but he's not the king. Now, there's a lot of details in that. Some of the Maharal points out, in a way, that made the danger greater. Because a king, at least, given that he rules over a country, he doesn't want necessarily to wipe out an entire people. Because after all, Ein Melech Beloyam, if he has no people to rule over, he's not a king. So therefore, he would not be as likely to do something like that, a genocidal zeta against an entire nation. Whereas an Odom, like Haman, who's only the prime minister, he doesn't have any such compunctions. So therefore, it means the danger was all the greater, and yet the Eved Shah saved us from it. On the other hand, the Ramaphoshim will point out, that it's kind of the other way around. Anaf Yosef points out over here the Rif rather points out, if it was a king, then it would have been much greater danger because it's Mi Yover Ach HaMelech, who can override the king. But when it's a Mishnah HaMelech, then it means the danger was not as great. So it means the Eved to begin with put us in a situation where the danger is not as great, and therefore we're, so to speak, it didn't take such a Nes L'mailam HaTeva in order to override it. It's according to that explanation, it didn't take a Nes L'mailam HaTeva because it wasn't a king. Had it been a king, then it would have taken a much greater degree of Nes to override it. Marashah, by the way, goes through over here and explains in detail that whole kapitel. We say it, after all, every day in davening. We should understand a little bit of what it means. So he goes through over here and explains how that whole kapitel is talking about of how Hashem has saved us through the various golosin, in particular B'kum Aleinu Odom, besides what we're saying over here, that Odom hints at Haman, it also refers to Edom. Odom, Edom, very, very similar. So B'kum Aleinu Edom, so B'chol Dov Adar Unam Aleinu L'chaleseinu. And then he goes on to explain, throughout Jewish history, there's always been three kinds of gzeiros. Sometimes they just try to interfere with Jews' parnasa. So that's referred to in the first couple of sukkim over there. Lula Hashem Shahayalanu, but Bakumalenu Odom, Azai Chaim Blaunu. They would have tried to swallow up our Chaim, our ability to make a living. Then you have the second one is where they actually threaten to kill the Jews. There you have the following psukim over there, Azai Chaim Blaunu, Bamarazim Pambanu, Nachla Avraham Avshenu, etc. And then you have the third thing is where sometimes they make a Zera of Shmad, where they try to force us to abandon Yiddishkeit, Rahman al-Tzlan. And that's referred to in the last psukim over there, Baruch Hashem Shalom Sanara Teref Lishinehem, and he goes on to explain how in detail how those psukim are referring in particular to Golus Edom, and eventually we finish off Ezreinu B'Shem Hashem. Hashem helps us with his name and does Kibbutz Golius Oisei Shemayim Ba'aretz, and Kibbutz Golius, as the Gemara says elsewhere, is as great as the day when heaven and earth were created. So that little capital that we say over there of eight psukim that we say before Shir Shoyim every day has in miniature in it the entire history of Golus and Gola. And with that, let's go to Inyani Mashiach Ugola. Yoni Mashiach Ugola. Chof Dalad Adar Aleph. Even after Bias HaMashiach, there's gonna still be around, and there's still gonna be a continuation of the Torah and Avodah and the good achlotis that we took in the time of Golos. As we know, there's the explanation of what Chazal say, Ashri Misha Bolatan, the Talmud Biyodi, happy as a person who comes to the Olam HaEmes with his Torah learning in his hand. So it means, in other words, we're going to come to Yemos Mashiach with the Torah that we learned in Golos. So how we, the preparation and the keli for the Giluyim and the Avodah of Gan Eden, and similarly when it comes to the Gola Amitis Vashlema, is through the Talmud Aviyadeh, through the learning that we do nowadays, most of which we learn Golosic things, and through that we take the Torah into Gan Eden, and we take it into L'Osid Lavoi. Now, even though Gan Eden and Gola are the opposite of Golus, nevertheless, we're taking the Golus Torah that we learned and bringing it into those places.
Why is it Golus Torah?
Because right now, we're learning mostly a Golus Torah. We're learning a Torah that was mostly mostly explained and clarified whenever during the time of Golus. We're learning about topics of Golus and so forth, but nevertheless, it's still. And similarly,
so we learn about the Beit Mikdash.
Yeah, we learn about the Beit Mikdash also, but a lot of what we learn about is it has to do more with the times and places of Golos. We learn halachas. The point is, now we're learning a lot of things that are more applicable, that are applicable also in the time of Golos, and nevertheless, we're saying that those are going to still have applicability, Limos Mashiach, and we're going to bring them into Limos Mashiach and elevate them to a higher level. Okay. So similarly, when it comes to the general avodah nowadays, where we know, as we know, the Alter Rebbe explained that the ultimate shleimus of Yemos Mashiach and Tchias HaMesim depends on our actions and our avodah throughout all the time of Golos. So it's not in other words that the Torah that we're learning now is going to be like nothing then. Adrabah, the whole gilui of Mashiach's times is going to depend on the Torah that we've learned and the mitzvahs that we've done now in Golos.
It's certain times, the Torah we learn today,
that's
will be like nothing.
In one sense, it's going to be like nothing, but on the other hand, the whole La'asid Lover is going to be founded on that. It's all going to be based on that. Okay, continuing with halachas of food on Shabbos. You're not allowed to break up snow or ice on Shabbos, but you are allowed to put ice into a cup or into a cup of water or juice or whatever, and they melt in there on their own, and there's no problem with that. During the winter time, you would have to be careful. You can't wash your hands with snow or ice water. If you do, then at least you have to be careful not to crush it between your hands. Now, also, he says you're allowed to break ice to get water from underneath it, although the Alter Rebbe limits that only to water that's in a cave. You wouldn't be able to, like this you have in all the old-time stories when they broke through the ice and were at the Tovel, you wouldn't be able to do that on Shabbos because there the ice is connected to the ground. As far as urinating into the snow, he says totally zorim efshir. If it's possible, you should avoid that. And the same thing, not to urinate on Shabbos into mud or loose dirt or whatever, because then you have issues of gibbol or other malachas like that.
What?
Of gibbol, of like kneading, like you're causing it to form into clay. See?
Isn't it like watering plants is also?
Water plants is an actual malacha d'araisa. You were talking about things that are mostly d'rabanan, right?